Hey, it's Kyle Meredith, host of the Kyle Meredith With podcast, presented by WFPK at WFPK.org and the Consequence Podcast Network. It's a series that puts the spotlight on iconic musicians and actors, inviting them to drop by and talk about their latest projects, whether it's albums, TV shows, films, or beyond.
I'm going to say something I don't want to say. Here it goes. Without Spinal Tap, there is no Tenacious D.
Whoa. Man.
We get great stories and the biggest scoops from people like Garbage's Shirley Manson, the 1975's Matty Healy, Jack Black and Kyle Gass of Tenacious D, Maya Hawke, Kiefer Sutherland, and everyone in between. New episodes arrive every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, so it's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover some new ones. You can find Kyle Meredith With on the Consequence Podcast Network or wherever you get your podcasts.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Discovery is often the word that we use on the podcast. This is the Wet Podcast. We'd love to discover new bands. We're going to discover, but we're also going to educate today. And educate means Barry, Lord Taco, and Brian are going to be educated about EDM music, something we know a little about, but not a lot. Here we go. Hey everybody, welcome back to the What Podcast. We love to explore, we love to experiment, we love to try new things. We like to admit we don't know everything. And today is all about education, exploration, and discovery. And we have a special guest. As I've alluded to in the past, we want to learn about EDM music. And we're going to do a couple of episodes, and this is just one. I'm Barry. That's Brian. That's Lord Taco. With us today is a special guest, Daniel. You might have heard Lord Taco reach out, kind of challenge him. If am I right? I'm going to let you introduce.
It was a little on purpose because, we've been saying that we don't know anything about EDM for years, and Daniel's been saying, have me on the show. So we called him out and here he is. So thanks for coming on.
By God, you're on the show. So what we're going to talk about, and like I said, we're going to do a couple episodes on EDM because it's such a huge part of Bonnaroo and it's such a huge part of, the music festival world.
Yeah, right? I recently talked to a local guy here in Chattanooga. His name's Justin Casey. He does, stage production. Barry, you know him, and not just for here in town, but he does it for Snoop Dogg is his biggest client, so that's about all you need to bring up. But EDM is something they've done more and more and more, and we briefly spoke about it last year, and him and his team love that production angle. Like, I mean, he didn't quite say this, but basically a rock show bores him. You know, when they have an EDM show, they have anything in that realm, the creativity is endless. So we'll bring him on eventually to talk about that from a production standpoint. I'm not even talking about how the music is created. So that's going to be fun to go down that road too. But just what in the world is this stuff? And it's like, it's not new. It's been around for a while. It's been around for decades. And just interested to talk about it.
Daniel, thank you. First of all, we're going to,
thank you guys for having me on. Long time fan.
Yeah. What year are you repping on the Roo shirt there?
This is the 2022 year.
Oh, okay.
All right. Nice. So we're gonna dive deep. And like I said, we had several people reach out and want to be guests. And trust me, we plan to have you. We're waiting for Where in the Woods lineup. And we're going to have a whole nother panel to talk specifically about probably acts on the Bonnaroo lineup. But like I said, Daniel, you've been, poking Taco for a while on Reddit, and so we wanted to do this. So, all right, so where to begin? First of all, this is not my genre. I don't think it's Brian's. I don't think it's Russ's. We're going to admit that. We're trying very hard not to be the old man get off my lawn type.
Yeah, too late.
But I also don't think we're as far removed from this music as we might think. So, all right, Daniel, EDM is an umbrella, right? I mean, it's electronic dance music is what it stands for. But as we've learned over the years, it now encompasses so many different genres. It's not one type, correct? So I'll let you go ahead and...
Correct. And I'll also add that within the United States, the two biggest genres of EDM are house music and the larger range of bass music. There's some genres that are bigger in other countries, but when we talk about the main artists that come to U.S. festivals, the vast majority of them either fall under the house umbrella or...
How do you define it?
I would say that as a whole and in totality, a lot of electronic dance music, that's what EDM stands for, is a genre that really falls under songs that have a higher BPM or beats per minutes with a lot of electronic elements. Also, other elements can be added in various forms like house music or drum and bass music or liquid drum and bass music can all have a steady beat that's kind of consistent throughout. But we also have some other genres that have a wide range of beats within them as well.
I don't know how far, Daniel, you go back with this stuff as far as from like a historian kind of aspect. I'm not expecting you to be that. But I remember, from the 90s, it was rave. I'll just call it rave culture was starting to build in the United States, and it started in the 80s, probably maybe even in the 70s in the UK and certain areas in Europe. And like My Life with the Thrill Kill Cult, Lords of Acid, that were just all of a sudden, that's what youth wanted to be involved in. And it had a lot to do with recreational drug use. Let's just be honest. We'll get back to that another time. That's not the point here. And I was sucked into it for a few minutes, and it was such a flash in the pan of a phase of mine. How much has music from those, like those two stick out to me as almost legendary names, Thrill Kill Cult and Lords of Acid. Where are we now, 24 plus 25 years later from that time frame, as far as how the music has evolved? Is it roughly the same? Is it a completely different sound? I mean, that's a pretty wide open question, I know.
Let me jump in real quick because I'm older than all of you.
Yeah.
I think it goes even back for, it's rap. I mean, this is what rap was. It was DJs. It was two turntables and a microphone. I mean, it was two guys with a turntable.
Hip hop, yeah.
Taking beats, from a platter and mixing them together. I mean, when I hear EDM, that's what I hear is, an artist, and I'll go ahead and call him an artist, whatever, hearing something else, something that someone else did and putting two things together or three things together. So go ahead. I jumped into your question, but I mean, to me, that's what I hear.
I agree with that completely, but just those two specific bands in particular, because to me, they were the biggest of that time frame. Where is it now to then?
I would say that we're kind of seeing both ends of the spectrum now because of the improvements of technology. It has become easier where people aren't having to do as much on their own in terms of individual sound bits and putting it together in the orchestrating of all of it with modern technology and the things that DJs are using these days. it's become easier to make the same things. So it within that, we're seeing some stuff that's simpler and just hitting, like, there's a method to the madness in terms of making a hit pop song or making a hit rap song, and a lot of it follows a kind of similar pattern. And we do see that in EDM some, but we also see some artists that with the expansion of this technology are able to take it to new levels in places we hadn't seen in the past as well.
Daniel, go ahead. Let's jump it, because I can already hear people listening like, who is this guy? Tell us a little bit about you. What is your interest in this music? Do you DJ? Do you create your own?
I've always been interested, but in terms of musical talent, I wasn't blessed as much in that field as some others. So I mean, it's always been something that intrigued me because of how much passion I had about the genre and music in general, but it's not necessarily been something that with limited attempts that I've had any success with personally.
Gotcha. I can't play the radio. I mean, I'll go ahead and say it.
So how long has this been a genre of music you've been narrowed in on, that's been something that you've been passionate about? A few years, 10 years, 20 years?
So I'm 31 years old, and I lived in Switzerland in 2006 into 2005 through 2007. And then when music was coming out through LimeWire and all other the platforms that we got music on back then, a lot, I was really introduced to electronic music then. And so one of the first songs that I heard was by Alice DJ. So I guess that would make.
How many Bonnaroos have you been to?
This year will be my fifth.
So when Bonnaroo, that's about the time that they switched, right? That's about the time the other became dedicated.
I was thinking about that last night and forgot to Google it, when the other stage became an official thing from
was
the other
it 18?
Tent.
Taco, was it your first year?
18 was my first year.
Was it that year?
But I think, well, because before that, they still had the other stage, right? But
yeah, okay.
So Calliope was still a big part of it too, right?
Yeah, it was after.
17 was my first year, and the other was there that year. So
it was okay.
Okay, so time for flies. People who are just jumping in, and we have to remind ourselves that, you know, half of the Bonnaroo crowd is new every year. The other stage used to be just another tent. It was this, that, and the other, and then 19 or so, it became completely dedicated to EDM music all day, all night. And I remember it was kind of a big deal, Brian, right? I mean, us old farts were like, what the hell?
Yeah, well, you took away one of our stages, first of all. And so, yeah, I mean, I've seen many, many shows on the other tent, far of corner up towards when you head out towards the damn clock tower, the mirrorball tower.
Yeah, for sure.
And when they made that move, a lot of us were like, well, okay, that's cool. I mean, said it very sarcastically. And
it wasn't
a surprise at that time necessarily, because the EDM music was starting to get in more and more. Like the first time I saw Pretty Lights, which I'd like to talk about what we were expecting from that show this year before we get out of here today, but first time I saw him, I believe was 2011, 2012. Was it that far ago? And it was just like in the middle of just Centeroo. Like, yeah, might have been on an actual stage proper, but I was immediately I'm not gonna say hooked, because that's totally the wrong word, but I was drawn in because I recognized what I was hearing, kind of, and is Pretty Lights a representative of this whole genre, Daniel, or is that just the one we all know the name of?
So I would say that Pretty Lights is kind of going an entirely different route altogether in the modern version of the band. I would say that Pretty Lights is the closest thing to a modern jam band as one can see. And
that makes sense. Yeah, because I was watching, while I was just taking some notes last night, I was watching a YouTube show. I don't know where it was from, but it was professional video. And I got that feel. I got that little bit of a jam band feel. And I want to come back to that jam band thing, just not quite yet. But what do we? Is Pretty Lights? Is he as big as I think he is? As far or in the crowd or in the scene? Is it kind of like, nah, that's yesterday's news?
Because of the tour that he had in 2023 and the reception of that tour, he is definitely him and the larger band as a whole, with the Pretty Lights band, they're definitely, with at least within the United States, a top five name for electronic acts that people are talking about.
So a little bit evolution, because we brought it up, or I brought it up. So, you know, it went from Bass Nectar, you know, whatever.
Skrillex,
you know, Bass Nectar, I'm a huge fan. Cause of Frenzy is one of my favorite, you know, despite everything he's done, and he should be, you know, whatever. That's a whole different topic. But I loved that song.
To Google that.
I know. Yeah, whatever. But I mean, so it went from an act, a couple of acts on the lineup, like you said, 2011, 2012, Pretty Lights. And most people thought of it as bass, you know, the and then the oomps, as we joked about last week. But you created a couple of playlists for us, which we'll reference and link here. The music has evolved greatly, correct? So there are many subgenres within EDM, enough so that they've created their own stage. So that's why we're talking about it. A lot of it, I mean, it had a specific thing for some of us old farts. It's that bass thing. It's that bass drop or the oomps, oomps, oomps. That's what we think about, but it's a whole lot more, right?
So in the early 2010s, we had Big Room and a lot in dubstep and some newer things that are kind of coming onto the scene this year. Drum and bass is getting more and more popular in the U.S. again within the last couple of years. It's really, really popular in the U.K. in that area, but drum and bass has made a big comeback. And within the last year or two, bass house has become really, really big, with the combination of bass music and house music, where we're having that steady house beat, but it's more in your face and added a bass element to it as well. And two artists from the lineup this year that kind of have some of that bass house element are ISO EXO and Knock 2.
Yeah. I remember, I've told this story many times. Early on, probably 2010, to whatever, I think it was Bass Nectar, whatever year he was there, he did like a 2 a.m. set. And my God, Brian, you were probably there. I mean, my heart stopped. Whatever bass note they hit.
Oh my goodness, I don't remember that necessarily. If it was at 2 a.m., there's a reason for not remembering that. But Bass Nectar's played here locally, and I was within a mile, like almost literally within like a very short but still far enough distance from where it was happening here locally, and it was bone rattling.
Some of that the interest was because it was almost like technology. It was like, because you could, you know, that was the interest. It was like, oh my God, they can drop a note that will literally make my heart stop. And then you had people like Girl Talk who would come in and you know, mix, put things together that were familiar, and part of the fun was, oh, I know that song, I know that beat. I know,
well, that's
that.
What got me into Pretty Lights at exactly. First was that I think there was a Nirvana sample, and I was like, huh, the hell's exactly. That, you know, which I just, sorry, I didn't mean to, if you're going somewhere with that, Barry.
No, I was just listening to Daniel's playlist, and Gautier, it is one of the songs that is now being mixed, and I'm like, oh my, that's we've come that far. I mean, that's what, a 5-year-old song, 6-year-old song, and all of a sudden that's been redone.
I think that song's a decade old.
Yeah,
is it that older. Old? Oh mm-hmm. My God, so I'm old. Forgive me.
Time flies.
Forgive me.
Well, so to that point, Daniel, how much of this from an industry standpoint, how much of this is sampling versus original creation and compositions? Does that even exist, or is this just a sampled world? Like most times,
when you think of an artist like Deadmau5, a lot of the stuff like he's doing is on programs like Ableton, but he didn't have a musical background, so he drew in every single note. So he wasn't able, artists can use a keyboard to play as if it was a piano or as if it was another instrument. And when they have a musical background, it's a lot easier for them to just play the keys as if they're notes and plug that in and use their own samples with the notes that they're playing from their musical background. But Deadmau5 actually had to draw every single bar of his songs because of his musical background not being what others are. So he's an example of someone that's making everything and drawing everything and doing everything himself. Whereas an artist like Pretty Lights, or a lot of the artists in the Phylos Records Takeover that we'll have linked to that playlist, they use a lot of samples from past songs and past artists, but with their own spin in terms of changing the samples, altering the samples, making them just, it's gotten to the point where samples are a half of a second, just and people are sampling a half of a second in order to take things in a song that Diplo used. They used a Justin Bieber sample that was 1 second long and used it throughout the song just as one part of that song. But sampling's become to the point where they're using more and more samples to create more and more unique sounds that have never been heard.
This is 100% old man question. How much of that do you know when you hear stuff like that? Are you like Brian and I assume Russ, where you're listening and you're picking out, oh, I know where that's from, or do you care?
Good question.
So when it's music that I've heard before or music that's been made within my lifetime, a lot of the times I have an ear for it and can hear it. I would say an act that uses a lot of older samples that I in turn look up because I want to know about the artist they're sampling and want to know kind of the history behind it. But they use a lot of samples from the 50s and 60s and 70s from old bits of songs from everywhere in the world. So from countries and music that I've never actively listened to, and they'll pick samples from anywhere and everywhere.
I remember interviewing George Clinton from P-Funk, who was at one time was the most sampled artist of all time. And I was like, does it piss you off that these people are sampling you? And he said, no, as long as I get paid, which was a funny answer.
That sounds like a George Clinton answer.
I know, right?
Sure.
But I don't know. Part of me, and again, it's an old man thing. Part of me is like, if I like that sound, like Gotye, 10 years, or going back to the 70s with, blues or R&B, part of me is like, why don't I just go back and listen to the original? But then part of me is like, okay, so somebody in a room by himself with a laptop put this together. And then part of me today is, that's pretty clever. I get what you did there. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
5-10 years ago, when the other became the EDM, it was everything sounded very similar to me, my ears.
I can say the same thing.
I didn't hear that. The playlist that you put together, Daniel, I don't hear that. I recognize Gotye and I recognize a lot of the songs, but the sounds are a whole lot different. It's pretty creative is what I'm hearing. Right. I mean,
and there are some genres that are very, very similar. Some people really like a subgenre called rhythm, but it has a similar beat. And to me, all the songs kind of sound the same, and it's not something that necessarily I enjoy, but I do know people that do enjoy it. And one of the artists on the lineup that kind of falls within that is Sudden Death. And there's a lot of people that really, really like a familiar head banging pattern and really, really are into that music and can go to a stage and listen to that all day, every day. But just for me, Within EDM, I do, like you're talking about, like things that have more samples, more tracks from more uniqueness, instrumentation even in it. But that's really the what I enjoy the most. So I'm on a similar.
All right, let's do this. Let's take a breath. I kind of feel like we jumped in and it was like, hey Daniel, here's 100 questions. you had to have been thinking about this. What message or what story or what, when you knew you were going to do this, what were you hoping to be able to share and say? Because I know Brian and I have had a bunch of questions right away, and I mean, I think it's all legitimate, but
I took some notes on the last 3 years just on bass versus house and total electronic artists in general, and kind of did some research there just to see where we're at.
Yeah. What'd you run into?
I went back to 2022 because we obviously didn't have 2021 or 2020, and 2019 is a long time ago at this point. So I really looked at the last 3 years. In 2022, there were 12 bass. So what I used to determine big acts, because house music is bigger than bass music, I used 2 million listeners on Spotify for house acts and 1 million for bass acts. Because usually, because the genre is smaller as a whole, artists that get less listens are still as well known. It's just house is more internationally known, more people listen to house music. So there's a higher threshold for what a well-known house artist is. But in 2022, there were 12 bass acts, 13 house acts, and seven other acts that don't necessarily fall distinctly in one of those two areas. And then in 2023, there were 13 bass acts, 8 house acts, and 8 other acts. The big difference being in 2022, there were 9 big house acts and 2 big bass acts. And then in 2023, there were 6 big, which was last year, there were 6 big bass acts and 5 big house acts. So even though last year there were more big bass acts and bass acts in general. And then the year before, there was a little bit more balance with the lineup, but a lot of the big names were house artists. And this year...
Go ahead, Daniel.
This year, we've kind of seen a drop-off altogether where there's only 4 bass acts. So a lot of people that really like bass music are not as happy with this year's lineup because it's kind of dropped off entirely to where there's only 4 names. There are a lot of house acts this year. There's 12 and 7 other acts. And in totality, before We're in the Woods, there's only 23 EDM acts this year when we saw 30 and 29. So there has been a big drop off in EDM from the last 2 years.
All right. So bass acts, we know. Everybody can figure out what that is. That's the bass drops and your heart stops. And you feel it in your chest. House acts, how do you define?
So house acts have a similar beat to them. And a lot of the time, the easy way to oversimplify it is that they have a Boots and Cats beat to them. So
that's the oomps, oomps, oomps.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a lot of samples, right? There's going to be a lot of clips and samples that you're going to recognize from other songs. And
there are. And within house music, tech house has become very popular, which is what Fisher follows under. And we have some other, and Oliver Heldens has been on the scene for 10 years and falls under a wide range of house acts. And then I talked.
So, so is Pretty Lights a house act?
I would say that Pretty Lights at this point doesn't necessarily fall underneath.
So another then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right, they've gotten to the point where they're playing so many instruments live and they're using so much sampling that it's different, that it can't really fall underneath either of those umbrellas.
Well, that goes to explain why I like Pretty Lights, is because it's got so many different elements of things that I actually recognize and like that I'm used to, as opposed to when you said DeadMau5, well, I think it was what you said, DeadMau5 doesn't have a musical background and learn to play music on a keyboard. To me, that's learning Guitar Hero to play
it's
guitar.
It's the space
like,
bar. I was going to ask about the space bar artist.
Like, what are you doing?
That's the criticism is he hits a space bar or whoever the artist is.
And it's unfair criticism to be sure, but it's not inaccurate criticism. It might be unfair to a degree, but it's not inaccurate. You want to learn to play a keyboard? Learn to play the damn keyboard, right? So I'm not trying to be critical. I didn't know that about Deadmau5, and that's a name I knew because they collaborated with Foo Fighters in 2011 at the Wasted Light album, that long ago, you know? So, like, it's clear that this has a place. It has a massive footprint, and I'm not trying to be a hater. I just had, when you said that kind of threw me off. It makes me think about the jam band thing that started this whole festival, which really fascinates me because I went through and it wasn't just a phase, it was half my life, 20 years of jam band fandom, and it really, it wasn't created by Bonnaroo, but it was fueled by it. Fire just roaring hotter every year.
Right.
This has got the same kind of feel.
The criticism there is it's noodling. You know, yeah. I mean,
and everything sounds the same. Every band never stops playing the same song over and over again.
Yeah, when does the song begin? When does it end? Where's the middle?
All this unfair criticism. You only do it when you're on drugs. It's not any good unless you're high, which there's truth to some of that. But I mean, it feels kind of the same, and that what makes me not want to dismiss it, because if somebody said
I'm with you. I'm not dismissing it, and it's also listening again, Daniel, to your playlist. Thank you. I mean, it's video game. It's what we hear, right? I mean, it's maybe not my generation because I grew up with Motown. I grew up in the 70s with arena rock. So, I mean, I hear all of that in this music and remember when it was new and original. And so, I mean, I get it, right?
I would say the one record label within EDM right now that's doing the most of those classic samples and bringing in those elements is Phylos Records. And it's why I would love Where in the Woods to have a Phylos Records tape.
Yeah, we were talking about that on our text. I did a quick Google search on Phylos, right? So it's just a record company, right? Like they're probably operate a little differently than we're used to as far as record company goes, but they're just a record company. And when you say a takeover, you mean their artists take over Wild in the Woods or Restraint, whatever the hell it's called, that's what you're referring to.
More to the Deadbeats takeover last year where Zed's Dead had all artists.
That's right.
Record label play up until they played at night. And one thing that's becoming popular within the EDM scene is that people are getting really attached to record labels and the sound within those record labels and kind of picking all the artists within that record label. And some fests and other events are now just booking by label. And then they're able to grab, it's easier to grab a set group of artists because they're all within the same label. They're all talking to the same people, but then people are also excited that it's a similar sound as well. So something that they did a good job of it last year and something that Where in the Woods could continue to benefit from is having various takeovers, because now with day passes, there'll be people that will come to Bonnaroo for a day just to go to the Where in the Woods for that particular record label tape.
All right, that makes sense.
This has got that hip hop kind of thing you're talking about.
Def Jam. It's Def Jam label.
Def Jam. Yeah.
I mean, this isn't, again, it's not new. Arista, you know, going back to the Allman Brothers and everybody that was on that label. And interesting. What's old is new. Old is new, and what's new is old. I'm glad you brought up the one day and the 2 day. How does this line up? And you said there are fewer. How does this lineup look to an EDM fan like yourself? And again, we want to have more people on for a whole nother show, maybe even two other shows when that Where in the Woods lineup drops. And several of you have reached out and said, I want to be on and talk about EDM, and we're going to do that. This just came up because Daniel was willing to come on and we wanted to do it. So how does this lineup stack up?
So obviously we talked about the fact that there's less artists. In addition to that, I would say that at least for me and for a lot of people, Bonnaroo successfully got, I would say, at least within the US, two of the five biggest EDM acts on the scene right now with Pretty Lights and Fred Again. So a lot of people are happy at the top with the artist that they were able to pull. It is his only, for Fred Again, it's his only festival in the US this year. So it's a very, it's a very unique name in that regard. And at the top end, it's very, very good. But in terms of the number of artists, and particularly people, for people that specifically like bass music, for some, the total number and the number of bass artists, it is lacking compared to the last.
So there you go, Russ. I mean, that's backwards from everything else, right? Most of us are happy with the undercard, Brian, and not the headline. But
that seems to be the prevailing opinion on most of the threads, are that the undercard is strong and the top is not so much. Again, you know, just depends on on who you ask. So, Daniel, you can speak to you specifically, but I'm asking you to make an unfair wide generalization of the fan base of, we'll just call EDM. I know there's so many sub, you know, I know it goes so much. This is like, you want someone coming to me like, what about all that grunge music you listen to? All right, come on now. You know, like, I get it, but clearly there must be a little bit of a understanding of music to be able to appreciate all this sampling. Do they have a bigger, and I have a stat here that makes me want to ask this question. The general listener of EDM, are their music tastes wide ranging, or is it really so hot that that's really where they focus all their time and energy, from going to festivals, listening to it on the weekends, out in the, having a party in the woods, whatever it might be, at the house party? Do you see their genre of music that they enjoyed being bigger or smaller, or can you even answer it?
Can I jump on? I'm going to jump on that question too, because I was thinking this similar. Will you just go to one stage?
I do not.
Yeah. I mean, and do you think the general, I think it's similar to Brian's question, the general EDM fan, are you just going to the other for five straight days, or where in the woods? Or is it all over the place?
I would kind of, you can kind of overly simplify and categorize it into a couple categories. People that within EDM that only listen to house music often listen to a lot of rap music and pop music as well, because on a whole, they listen to a lot of music that's mainstream and popular. So those kind of things go together. With more of the sampling in terms of Philo's and some of the even experimental bass music, the weirder side of bass music, a lot of that meshes well. And a lot of the people that like experimental bass music and a lot of sampling also like jam music as well. So kind of, there's kind of like the two sides where it's like the more musical side and technical side and less popular side, and then kind of the more mainstream side. And that's an overgeneralization. Everyone has different tastes in music, but I mean,
sure.
Did he answer your question, Brian? I didn't mean to step on your question.
Yeah, no, mostly. And that's the way you just quickly said you don't stick around at one full show. Like, you're not there to see a full set necessarily, because that makes sense to me. The music's designed to not be necessarily consumed that way. But from Eventbrite, one of the mid-level ticket distribution companies, discovered that 78% of fans say that they're more likely to, of EDM fans, are more likely to attend an event if their peers do. 78% compared to 43%. So basically we're talking about friend recommendations. Like if I say, hey, Barry, I'm going to go see a rock show, you want to go? 43% say, eh, my friend says it's cool, maybe I will. 78% of EDM say, you're going, I'm going. That's a brand loyalty that I don't see anywhere else.
I can speak on that as well. I like a wide range of music, but I have noticed that I've gone to an event with a friend and met 10 new friends, to the point where now if there's an EDM event at Hampton Coliseum, we'll all meet up, and we're from anywhere from Maine all the way down to Florida and from all over in the US, and we'll go to one area for one big event and all see each other. And that might be the only time we see each other the entire year. And I've only really felt that within somewhat the jam community, and even more so the ED.
Yeah, that's jam all day long. I mean, I still have people, if I don't really go to Widespread Panic shows anymore, but that would be a good example of a comparative top of the mountain type artist that when I show up, no matter where it is, oh, there's that guy from Hickory,
right. You
know, North Carolina, right. That right. guy from Asheville.
Yeah.
And you don't find that anywhere else. And I thought that was, or you don't find that certainly very often anywhere else. And I thought that that percentage of just recommendations was huge. To what the jam band community used to respond to all the time, I'm going to ask you the same thing about EDM, that the recreational drug use culture that comes along with both of these genres, do you have disdain for that thought? Is that an irritation to you? Do people amongst your peer group just get beyond disgusted hearing that as far as linking recreational drug use in festivals and that music? Because the same thing happened to jam people and it used to irritate me, but nowadays I kind of like, you know, kind of goes together, really. Like, is that something that you're, or you just embrace it, or how does that go? How do you guys think about
that? As a primary thing, I think it's very important to point out how prevalent fentanyl has become within the community. And yeah. while you talked about the 90s and people going to raves and being able to do whatever and not worry about it as much, we're not really in an era where that can be the case.
Sure, but I mean, that doesn't mean that young, I mean, you're now on your way to not so young anymore, but, you know, this is very popular with your age, with 10 years younger than you. They don't give two bleeps what any of us say on a podcast about fentanyl. I guess I wondered how true it was as far as how much of this is for chemically enhanced, and is it irritating for fans of the genre?
The reputation, the perception. Yeah.
I would say that it's just as true as the jam community in terms of
means it's true, but it's not. You know, yeah. It is, but it isn't.
Yeah.
Which means it is.
So Fred again. That is from listening to some other, and by the way, I wanted to give a shout out to the Ruham guys, a couple of great podcasts. I love Jake and Parker, and they've had a couple of really great podcasts. And of course,
don't forget Reed,
Parker and Reed, exactly. the three of them, and Michael, the four of them. But the Fred again seems to have become kind of a, I don't know if that, it, maybe that's the one that people are talking about, like why that's a headliner. But as we had Brad and Corey on, this is a big deal. It's a huge deal. It's the only North American set that he's going to do at Bonnaroo. It's going to close out Sunday night.
I know that's cool. Like that's
exactly
special.
That's my point. I mean, we're pretty excited about it. How big a deal is that?
So I have some background on him. If anyone didn't know, he started as a producer in 2014 when he was 20 years old, and he's worked with BTS, a big K-pop group, and Stormzy, and produced
doesn't help in my universe, but anyway,
produced two of Ed Sheeran's records as well. So
he has
worked on some bigger projects to start out on, but really has like come onto his own recently. I added that he plays piano, percussion. He actually sings. He adds bass loops. He has vocal samples, and in some of his stuff, he also plays the marimbas.
It's going to be a big show, right? I mean, it's not just going to be, it's going to be everything, lights, the sound.
Escalation within it is that because it's a big show, last year at Coachella, he brought out Skrillex and Fortet. And Fortet is playing a set the same day, so Fortet might be there. But then a lot of people are also hoping that Skrillex might be there as well.
I've seen the Skrillex things quashed more than anything, because if he's going to be there, Bonnaroo is going to sell that. that's what I believe when I read. The more I see on this Fred again thing, the more I do recognize the uniqueness and cool factor. When you're talking about some of the producers, Pretty Lights work with Rick Rubin. you know, half decade ago, maybe even a decade ago. But when it comes to the Daniel, to the live experience, right? So you're going to see this show. I saw the pretty lights thing in passing. I stopped by and then, you know, just moved right along. How much of this, and this kind of is the same thing as a jam question you would ask, how much of a live performance, we're sitting there for an hour watching one of these acts, is improvised, and how much of it is like it sounds like on the record, right? Like, is this a situation where you're never going to see the same show twice? Is it quite, can it get that unique? Or
so there were only three songs that they played at ever. So they went to cities for either two or three shows, and there were only three songs that were played in every single group of shows.
And even those three songs might not at all be like the way they were played the night or week or month before. Is that fair?
Correct. So on average, Pretty Lights songs on the actual records and singles are between 3 and 5 minutes, and the live versions have been on average between 10 and 15 minutes. So you're getting 7 to 10 minutes of.
So it is a jam band style, improvising style of music, which is... which is cool, because you know you're going to see something that you didn't see last night, which I'm a big fan of not doing, you know, when rock bands do the repeat thing over and over again. It annoys me. So,
yeah. Stupid question along those lines. Is this kind of music you listen to in the car?
I had that one written down.
Or is it just is it better live? I mean, obviously it's better live, but is this what you listen to, you know, when you're listening?
I'm really, really hoping that Pretty Lights puts out more of their live music on different platforms. Right now, you're having to go back and watch the old shows on YouTube and SoundCloud and other things. I'm hoping that they put a lot more of the live stuff. But Pretty Lights, the modern version of Pretty Lights, really, really is like jam bands, where you're going to have to go back and listen to live shows rather than the singles that they have on, because it's not even comparable what they're doing compared to.
Yeah. I mean, anybody listening to this knows I'm a huge My Morning Jacket. They're a live band. I mean, I can listen to their albums, but it's because I'm listening to the live sets and, you know, so I get it. Again, the jam band comparison is really good. All right. So who are the Don't Miss? We talked about Fred again. We talked about Pretty Lights, obviously.
So the Bonner BPM playlist I made is the 16 artists that I'm most excited to see. But if we want to get it down to like five, Fred again is definitely up there for me. Casablanca is up there for me. Fisher's up there for me. Pretty Lights is up there for me. And then I'm very excited for Shy FX, which is a drum and bass artist. The only drum and bass artist on the lineup. Very, very popular in the UK, but we don't see as much of it in the United States. But I'm very excited for that show. He's been making music since 1992, and he's really a pioneer of the drum and bass scene.
What separates him for you?
I think his longevity, and really, it's really the only drum and bass act that we've seen in the last 3 years. So it is like a novelty to get a drum and bass artist.
Well, I'll tell you what's dragging me in here, going back to Pretty Lights real quick. We don't have to spend a lot of time on it, but this Thursday night late on the What, I mean, I don't know if everybody agrees with me or not, or many people, that the What stage is the greatest stage in the history of music. I don't know. Maybe the other's the second best, or maybe they're tied. I don't know. I have the biggest hopes of a show I've seen on this What stage, because it's every show I've ever seen there is one of my favorite shows I've ever seen, of whoever, from Sheryl Crow to Portugal the Man to Panic to Brothers to All My Brothers to whoever. I mean, that's going to be some big sound, yeah. Big light. I mean, are you expecting something really big time on that Thursday night from Pretty Lights?
So at the Caverns, they brought out the drones, and the drones are, the company that they use for the drones is based in Tennessee. So at this point, I would be very,
the drones.
I would be very, very shocked if they don't have the drones as part of
that. Sounds dangerous.
But really, it's just like at the Grateful Dead show that was in Colorado, where they are Dead & Co. in Colorado.
Yeah, yeah.
Where they had the drones up in the sky. It's similar to that.
Oh, okay, cool.
That's very cool.
Yeah, I'm expecting a lot. I'll be there Thursday for that. I don't know that I'll catch the second go around, whenever that is, Saturday, I guess. When are we, where in the woods, when are we expecting to see this from all of the panel here? Do we know? Have anybody fallen these threads enough? Is we any day, any week, any month?
Any day. I'm going to get Tuesdays usually.
They said late February, early March. So,
yeah, Tuesday. Don't they typically drop on a Tuesday?
It could be this Tuesday. So it could be out by the time, you know, you're listening to this. Yeah, we just don't know.
It could have been yesterday by the time you're hearing
this. Yeah, we'll certainly circle back around to it.
Yeah, which is why we want to have more of episodes of this, because
we're
going to
do this again
about. Yeah,
for sure. And for everybody sitting here thinking, you know, again, Daniel, thank you.
Yes, sir.
But for everybody listening, you know, like, why is this guy the expert? It's just because we wanted to have him on, and he got under Russ's skin, and Russ challenged him, and he's on.
Wasn't my skin.
No, I mean that in a great way. Daniel, have we covered everything that you wanted to cover today? I know you did a lot of prep, and so did we. I did more prep for this show than I've ever done for one of our shows, and I think Brian did as well. Have we covered everything?
As we're anticipating the Where in the Woods lineup, it's important to point out that the last 2 years, when you add in the Where in the Woods lineup, we had 48 and 47 EDM acts. So for it to be comparable this year, we're going to need 4 or 25 names on the lineup for some people to be happy. So it's got large shoes to fill.
How many Where in the Woods acts a year do we have? That about 10, 12, 15, 20?
In 2022, we had 16 unique EDM acts. And in 2023, there were 18 unique acts.
It would have to be a big year to get to the number that you're talking about.
What else, guys? Anything, any other questions, any other points?
The generalized stuff we pretty much got to. One quote here I thought was interesting from Mix Mag in the 2000s, and it was comparing it a lot to UK. It's a long, I'm not going to read all of it, but just one thing I highlighted here. And Live Nation also has a lot to do. You know, they're taking over everything. They're taking over this too. But like many music genres, trying to pin it down exactly is like trying to grab a fistful of water.
Nice.
I thought that was a pretty good line, just randomly that I ran into.
Nice.
I still find it very difficult to wrap my head around how much sampling goes on in this. But I had that problem, and I don't mean to call it a problem, but I had that trouble grasping it as a music fan with the hip hop culture in that world of 30, 40 years ago too, especially sitting here in a podcast that if you play 30 seconds of somebody's song, it gets flagged and thrown in the garbage can. You know, it's like, what the hell, man? And their fair use law. I spent a long time looking at, you want to talk about jargon, you know, the laws around a lot of this stuff and fair use. I don't know how the hell they get away with all of this so regularly, but they do, and it works. I guess, yeah. You know.
Yeah. You know, all I'll say to sort of wrap up is I'm a fan. I don't hate. That's not even the right way. I like EDM. It's not something that I'm going to listen to in the car over and over and over and over and over and over. There are certain songs that I like. I was very impressed with, Daniel, the playlist to see where it's come. There's a lot that the different genres and the different areas that things have gone, I will say, I like it. I mean, it's, you know.
I like Pretty Lights, and I had from the moment I heard it. Yeah. I can't wait for the show, but that's all. Like, I'm not going to go to another one.
It's going to be a lot of fun. I want to see the Fred Again thing. I want to see both.
Yeah, I haven't been there on a Sunday night in years. We'll see how it goes. But right. Daniel, what do we miss as we wrap things up? Anything?
I would just, for people that aren't familiar with Fred Again, I would, some recommendations. If you wanted to hear something that has club vibes, it would be his Boiler Room set from 2022. That's the first thing I heard, and I wanted him to be on the Bonnaroo lineup last year, so I'm excited that we finally got him this year. And then to see kind of that Fortet and Skrillex added in, you can listen to the Coachella set from last year. And then if you want to just see him on his own, doing his own thing with a lot of live elements, his studio live 1 through 3 for Fred Again. And then definitely for Pretty Lights, all the live shows within the last year, because that's kind of the best indication of what they've been doing.
Really quick, Daniel, you said you wanted Fred again last year. Were you surprised to see them on the What as a headliner? Was that a surprise to you?
Based on the fact of how he's blown up from last year to this year, it wasn't as surprising to me. He's getting to the point where when he's doing pop-ups in cities, he's currently in Australia, and he had a pop-up in New York as well. But he's selling out 5,000 to 10,000 seat venues within a minute, and it's getting to the point where it's impossible to get a seat for his shows. Even if you follow him and have have notifications and everything, just like if you're not there at the right place at the right time, like seeing his shows pop up, then you're just not gonna go.
No denying it. It's powerful stuff.
So I would expect a lot of people to get a single day pass to come see him if they haven't been able to see him in any other capacity. Because really in the US, he's only been really staying in New York and LA so far. He hasn't had a tour within the whole United States, and he's been, I think he did 12 shows in LA and six to eight in New York. So he's really kind of staying in those kind of areas.
All right, cool. Daniel, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And
Appreciate the effort, man. Appreciate the effort. We probably didn't get to, I bet you got a lot there like, damn it, guys, I got all this stuff. But I appreciate it, man.
All right, so there you go. What'd you learn? Did we learn anything?
Not really, and I don't mean that in a bad way at all, because I'd already skimmed through. I mean, I actually learned a lot. I just can't remember half of it. I can't remember half of it. But as far as the generalizations, I not as much because I'm really looking forward to this Pretty Light show. I saw them playing Althea, Grateful Dead, on one of the videos I was watching last night. And as soon as it got to the part where the singing, when it changed, the bass dropped, as they say. And I was like, damn it, man. Where did my Grateful Dead song go? Yeah. But I don't think that's what the point
is. I tell you, the thing that stood out to me, and you brought it up and kept bringing it up, is the comparison to jam bands. I think
uncanny, right? It's
I think
crazy.
It's valid. That and just going back to early rap.
That is something new today. So speaking of your new question, that I thought that was true, but I didn't know how much those two scenes mirrored each other.
The three. Yeah, really.
Yeah. Oh, the three.
EDM, rap, and jam.
And
yeah.
Jam. And this festival has been paramount to a lot of that.
I think that's 100% right. And I remember going, I've told this story before, 2 o'clock in the morning with Mike Dewar, our campmate, and Denson, to check out EDM the year that the other became dedicated to EDM. You know, Mike was like, I don't get it, you know? And
he's a music promoter here locally, so he gets music more than anybody.
Knows what he's doing. Yeah, you're 100% right. Yeah. He's been doing this a long time. I remember saying, I get it. I mean, it's what the kids like. I mean, you know, forgive me again for sounding like the old man, but I get that. It may be not my thing, maybe not your thing. I was not into jam bands. I like a little bit, but I'm good for 10 minutes. You know, I can't imagine all day long, 24/7.
It's
I'm
wild.
Not the audience.
Yeah. Trends are wild, and how much they can or might not take over anybody. I was a jam band guy for 20 years, probably closer to 15, and the fade hit. I don't want to listen to jam music now to save my life, outside of like the favorites, like my favorite, sure. Favorite core, Dead, Panic, Allman Brothers, you know, way before New Age. Yes, I love that stuff. But hey, let's go listen to 15 minutes of Althea.
Yeah, my daughter hears the opening notes to Whipping Post, and you can just see the shoulder. And my wife and I are like, yes.
Yeah, you got a drink? It's topped off. You ready? We're going to be here a while.
We're like, yes.
Hell, that was 10 minutes. Oh, my God. That was 10 minutes on the record in 1975 or whatever year it was.
Exactly.
So, yeah. So I wonder, is this a youth phase out eventually in their life? Or is this something, you know, they'll be 50 and like, man, that Pretty Light show in 2011, dude. Like, I don't know. I wonder, you know. It's just,
well,
time will tell.
the list that Daniel put together for us, and again, we're going to link to it.
Yeah, it's exhaustive. There's so much there.
It's great, and thanks to him for doing that. But it's so different than the list that I would have put together 5 years ago when the other came around, which was a lot of the bass and drum type.
Yeah, that was real popular at that moment.
You know, and it all sounded alike. The list that Daniel put together does not all sound alike. The genre.
Yeah, I agree with that.
The genre has evolved a great deal. It's, you know,
it's like Bass Nectar. I don't like. I've never heard a Bass Nectar song. I know you said I didn't. I've never heard a Bass Nectar song that made me think I got to hear that again. Yeah. I've heard countless Pretty Light song that was like,
yeah.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Girl Talk. I can do Girl Talk.
Yeah, and I forgot all about Girl Talk till you mentioned it earlier. And Dead Mouse, I forgot about that till he mentioned. I didn't know he didn't play instruments except for learning how to play a keyboard. But
yeah, it's all right. Good show. So next week, don't know what we're doing. We're, like I said, the Where in the Woods is going to drop. Our plan is to put a panel together with several of the people that have reached out. That want to talk about EDM and all of that. And
continue to reach out. If you're listening and you think you've got something you want to come on and tell us, you know, we're open to that.
I do. I mentioned it earlier. I don't know why I didn't find it before, but, the Ruham guys, have done a couple of great episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Go check them out. They talk at length about the 1 day, 2 day thing. We kind of touched on that. Do you guys have any more thoughts on the 1 day tickets, 2 day tickets? And yeah.
I find it silly to when I see people upset about it. I do. I find it a little silly.
Seems like it's mostly calmed down. I guess people are kind of, you know, have let that settle. I think a big part of the backlash was the fact that they came on our show and were very adamant that, no, you, if you want to come to Bonnaroo, you got to do the full 4 days and, you know, make
good
a big
point.
Deal about it. And then
yeah,
so I think the backlash just comes from them backtracking on that particular point.
Yeah, if Bonnaroo thought this was a good idea, they would have done it from the jump.
Right.
If they thought this was the way to go, they would have already done it. I think it has to do with, I think it's a representation of ticket sales. I don't know.
100%.
You're right. No, you're 100% right. There's no question about it. The only criticism that I've heard that sticks at all for me is the idea that you might have a bunch of people come in for 1 day and think they should elbow their way up to the front and they should take over versus those of us who have been literally sweating it out for 4 days or whatever.
Right.
That's,
yeah.
You know, what are you going to do?
That one falls a little deaf to me. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there's truth to it, but I mean, this is a, I don't know. I don't think that's going to be a big deal, but I, you know, this is a big space, a lot of people, and a lot of anecdotal things are going to happen.
And I think, again, going back to Jake and Parker, I go back and listen to their episode. I think they really hit it. Just what you guys said. It doesn't change our lives at all in reality. And no, if it's what Bonnaroo has to do to survive, then come on, bring it. Because
there's still
Bonnaroo
a good chance
to survive.
These people that are buying 1 and 2 day tickets this year, they might love it so much they'll buy a full, full weekend next year.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of layers to why to do this, and I don't see anything negative coming out of it.
No, I agree.
Only positivity can come out of doing this. Dollars and cents, sparking interest. To me, it makes a lot of sense. They probably should have done it from the jump.
I agree. I just wanted to bring that up because, like I said, I listened to their episode the other day, and they made a lot of good points. And all right, anything else? Any other news?
All right. I think we're good to go.
All right, another good show. Love you guys. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Hit like and share. Thanks to Consequence. And see you guys on the farm.
Thank you.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Get all the Masterforce outdoor power equipment you need to maintain your yard at Menards. Own the outdoors with Masterforce 80-volt power equipment, delivering all the power of gas without the maintenance. The entire 80-volt line is powered by brushless motors for ultimate performance and productivity. From lawnmowers to leaf blowers, string trimmers, and more, find everything you need to create the lawn of your dreams with Masterforce power equipment at Menards. Save